Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm joined by Marina Hyde, who has written a fantastic book called What Just Happened, which is based on her Guardian column that I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Hello, Marina. How are you doing?
Hello, Richard. I'm fine. It is an honour to be on your show. Hello.
Well, it's an honour to have you. So for people who might not know, I can't imagine there are any people who don't know. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself first and who you are and what you do?
I write columns for The Guardian, and I write on various different subjects, sort of politics, sports, celebrity. And this book is a collection of my columns from in recent years, from I've stuck a pin in 2016,
yeah.
The year where perhaps we all fell down the rabbit hole, went through the looking glass, just basically when we entered the realm of chaos in which we still live. And, you know, if any of your listeners know the exit strategy or how to get out of it, I would please let them get in touch with me and we can all escape through some hatch.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing that it sort of doesn't, there was no way to end. It'd be nice to think we got to the end, but unfortunately the book ends before we're now, which is still crazy things are happening. So, yeah, it's...
We're mid-arc, aren't we? The arc of history, is not bending towards justice. It's gone off on a tangent.
I think so, but there'll be a second volume, which will hopefully... maybe when humanity is finished, unfortunately, it might be. I mean, I think that's the. It is. It's a very funny book, obviously, as people who read your columns will know. But it's kind of horrifying as well to relive all of this.
You're sort of clambering into the disaster simulator and just going through it again. It was quite interesting when I was doing this sort of selection of the ones to go in. I thought there's also, I should say, there's lots of other things in it, like
sure.
Celebrities and sports and people, whichever. I've tried to break up the politics with that, but. When I was selecting them to kind of tell the story, you kept thinking, oh, yeah, it seems really bad at this point, but it gets a lot worse. And so you're just trying to think, God, it's really weird sort of going back to see how we got into a deeper and deeper and deeper mess, basically.
Yeah. It's a really, I mean, I think it's a genuinely fantastic historical documentation of that time. But I mean, the very first one is about the assassination of Joe Cox. And I remember that day so vividly and how shocked. I mean, me and my wife went out for dinner and we were just, we couldn't speak and how we thought, oh, this is the worst thing that could ever happen. And then just how many times we felt that feeling over the last 6 years is just incredible. So it's amazing to start with that.
Yeah, I started with that one because although, you know, lots of my columns are full of jokes and whatever, I thought it's really important to remind people of the kind of stakes in all of this. It's real and it can get horrendous. And these things really matter. And what people say matter and how people conduct themselves in public life matters. And so I guess I thought that would be a good place to start because it reminds you that away from all the sort of jokes and the, you know, it's truly deadly serious.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that possibly was that opening of this terrible
the opening of the gate. Opened the gate. I've had a lot of discussions with friends like who originally opened the gate, and some people think it goes a lot further back and that the gate was opened in the Blair years. But so I mean, David Cameron opened the gate, but lots of people maybe opened the gate, but here we all are.
There's all those points where you look back and you think, oh, if only the other Miliband brother had won. There's all sorts of things where you think maybe that would have changed everything, but
yes, I don't think he would have changed everything, the other Miliband. I think he was the worst Miliband.
He was, but I think it would have...
Even compared to Ralph.
Things would have changed.
Of course.
Things have changed, you know, things would have changed so much. I mean, there's so many points, but that's what this book shows as well. It's just there's so many points where things could change. I think what you also, and I think you allude to it in your introduction to it, is that if there's so much has happened in the last 6 years that it will actually remind you of things that were astonishing and that preoccupied us at the time. That we've actually there's too much information that they've been pushed out of our heads.
We've had to bury a lot of it as well, just to sort of psychiatrically survive. You have to sort of like put it in a locker beyond use, like put it down beneath the waves and just think, I can't think of the moment when Michael Howard literally suggested we went to war with Spain. I can't think of that because I have to hang on just as much as I can to my sanity. And there's so many of those incidents that you think, why did that really happen? Actually, for people writing about the news, you know, there were times in the olden times where you could go for like weeks really without thinking about the news. And now so many things were happening every day that I remember there was one day when Boris Johnson sent some brand new junior minister to go to the House of Commons and answer questions about the fact that Boris Johnson had just been revealed to have been having an affair with Jennifer R. Curie, who lived in a flat with a stripper's pole. And I just saw, you know, this some random, I can't even remember what department he was, but he was a completely junior minister. And in any normal time, you know, the fact that a prime minister had done that would have, you know, we'd have written about it for weeks. But by the time of that, I can't remember what happened in the afternoon, but it was something so much bigger that was scarcely mentioned. Yeah. All this amazing material really has gone to waste. I mean, half the stuff you didn't write about was fascinating.
That is incredible. Do you think there was a point that who was the first politician who just decided to, you know, to sit out the lie and not resign and just get away? Because there's a couple of points in it where I think, obviously, I thought that the Trump inauguration, where he just lied about the number of people who were there, despite the photographic evidence, sort of, I thought that was the point where if people don't say, we have to stop this or we have to stand up to this, then what's going to happen? But equally...
That was the debut of the phrase alternative facts.
Yeah.
And I mean, once that had been said out in public, you have to hunt it down immediately and kill it or else. And we didn't. You know, we allowed it to breed.
And once it's been let go, then they know they can let anything go. And then I think also Dominic Cummings being able to get away with the kind of ridiculous lie about testing his eyesight while driving, which doesn't even make any sense as an argument.
I would never get over that, mate. Like sitting in that garden in number 10 and the whole country obviously not able to do anything else because we were basically locked in our houses, thinking, I'm going to watch this guy. He looks like the guy at my kid's school that nobody wants to talk to at the parents' meeting because he's just a weirdo teacher. Yeah, that little desk out in the, you know, out in the garden. And he was really late, like he was sort of Mariah Carey or something. It's like, turn up on time. And the things he said was so obviously ridiculous. He's still held as a sort of giant sage by many people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just, and even in front of the select committee, he still claimed that however strange it sounds, he was trying to test his eyesight by putting his wife and child in a car and driving quite a long distance.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Is it because people have come to not trust journalists? Is it because journalists, I mean, not including you in this, because you're just commentating, but not doing their job of going, well, come on, this is palpable bullshit. Why would you test your eyes with a child in the back of the car in any case if that was what you were doing? Has journalism let us down? Is it because so much of the news we kind of accept is not truthful anyway?
It's quite difficult. I mean, it's quite difficult. A lot of, you know, the British press compared to, say, the American press will do the thing of, like, if one of them doesn't get the important question answered, then the next one will ask it and they will keep asking. You know, the level of questioning that's had to be put on the Prime Minister's spokesman over the last few years has been ridiculous. It still absolutely blows my mind that they spent like £3.2 million building that like briefing room. And they were going to televise the lobby briefing every day. I was like, I mean, it's quite watchable, but why on earth? I think they thought it would like make the journalists behave better.
Right.
Which was just, I'm sorry, no. That would never happen. And it would have been, it would have been good to watch, I think. But they eventually got, I don't know, it's hard to say. I mean, I do think those questions were answered. But ultimately, as we discovered with Trump and whatever, if they just will not engage on any rational level and just say, well, that's the truth, I did drive to test my eyes. Even if everybody said, this is obviously ridiculous. But they just get away with it, don't they? It's quite hard. If you're shameless enough, you can get away with a huge amount.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I don't know. Will that ever change, do you think? I mean, I know you say you don't like making predictions. Will we ever get to the point where someone gets into politics? I feel like with politics now, people, maybe this was always the case, but it seems worse. The politicians are saying what they think the public will vote for rather than what they think, whereas it should be, here's what I think. Here's what I want to do for the best for the country. If you agree, vote for me. If you don't, then don't vote for me. And that should be the way it works, right? For the good of the country.
I mean, absolutely. And I think it's quite odd because I think, you know, one of the biggest things that you hear people talking about all the time is imposter syndrome. And sort of everyone, with the exception of them, seems to feel this like, am I in the wrong job here? Everybody feels this thing. It's become very self-selecting. And I think, you know, it is horrible and difficult, the amount of scrutiny they get. It is difficult. I'm sort of a belief that you should pay them more. But if you did pay them more, then I don't think they should just march through like lobby fodder and vote for whatever they're told and stay on all the, and just, they have a, as you said, the way you described it, the way that they have a part to play that is, that at the moment, they don't, they're either too pliant or they freelance or they're on Twitter all the time, whatever it is. But if they up their game, then I'm of the belief that MPs should be paid more, perhaps to attract a different type of person.
I think that, you know, I'm all for it. I think it will happen. I'm sure it will happen eventually, but I feel like there needs, it feels like when you studied the sort of rotten boroughs of the 19th century and how, you know, there was this amazing, there was a sort of shift in the way that was done. And those, it feels like we need to completely revamp.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a theory that British politics has actually always been completely dreadful, with the exception of about sort of 60 years around about the war and the various intakes after it, where people who'd gone through this terrible national event, really amazing people went into politics. It's not a surprise that those were the years of consensus and all sorts of great things about our state were built during that time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there was a sort of falling off in the quality. But that fall, you know, as you say, if you go back to the 19th century and before, I mean, really terrible people were involved in politics and it was pretty rotten. I mean, not all, but most.
Yeah.
So it's possible that because in living memory, there was this kind of some quite good years of people, we think that it was always like that and it's gone wrong. In fact, it might have just reverted to the norm.
Well, I mean, this book is, you know, it is incredible, and it's not something you can sit down and read in one go. I think you need to pace yourself a little bit because there's so much in there, and this isn't even everything.
No, there was so much. I couldn't remember writing half of it. I thought, my God, I mean, I must have been in a sort of fever dream when I wrote these things down. And, you know, there was lots to leave out as well because there were so many things had occurred.
You're obviously very prolific. I write a blog every day, but it's about myself, usually sometimes about the news, but it's very much a vomit draft, first draft thing.
I like your blog.
Oh, thank you. but it's very, you know, it's to write newspaper standard columns. I mean, you're writing, what, three or four a week? Are you or more of that?
I used to do three, now I do two, but on right. sometimes I'll write every day if it's an election or yeah. something is really busy in politics. So I'll probably do three this week because it's a sort of big news time. But yeah, it's just a trade, Richard. It's just a trade. It's not an art. It's filling the space and, you know, it's a knack like anything. The longer you've done it, the easier to some extent it gets.
Well, maybe, but you're very witty and, you know, I read the papers a lot and I do various things. Today I was reading, looking through the news stories and there are things that are definitely filling the newspaper, like someone listing 10 films where they thought there were mistakes in, you know, these are newspaper articles. There's things about a woman going to Greg's, trying to order something and finding out it had changed its name to something else. She was momentarily confused. And that's in the papers. Those are fillers. Whereas this...
I don't really know what to say about that. I didn't read a lot of the newspapers, actually. I'm completely addicted to the comments section on Mail Online. I'm absolutely... I spend a huge amount of time reading. I find it really sort of fascinating. It's like a kind of live focus group away from your filter bubble. It's really interesting. I'm gripped constantly by... what plays well, what doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, from your point of view, in terms of being, you know, writing these, because I think other writers might be interested as well. I think obviously you get to choose. You'd usually be writing about the main story, so you don't have to go through papers going, "What am I going to write about?" You go, "Boris Johnson's done this ridiculous." You're looking for.
You did in the old days. You did have to go through the papers thinking, "What am I going to write about?" But right. now it's much more like "What aren't I going to write about?" Because so I get up in the morning, I think, "What should I write about today?" And I choose it. I don't really have a start at the beginning. I always just like write some random things down in a Word document and then move them all around. And then kind of eventually, after about 2 or 3 hours out of that soup, has staggered a form of newspaper column, which I then send. So I've normally sent it to them by midday.
But it's good to do it in 2 or 3. When I wrote a column for the Metro again, which was more personal based than news based, but sometimes it would take me 3 days to think of something to write about. And so sometimes I could do it in an hour or two, but sometimes it would take me all week to write 600 words.
Anything you write quickly is the best in my personal experience and talking to lots of other writers. If you write it quickly, it's much the best. There are ones where, you know, you labour over it for ages and then you just eventually have to put the handbrake on at 1,000 words and just think, well, that is dead on arrival. But what can you do? You know, there's a chance to write a better one the next day. So that's a nice... for people like me with short attention spans. And, you know, if you think I've been absolutely totally hopeless today, which I feel all the time, you do think, well, at least there's another chance, either tomorrow or in a couple of days' time, and you can do something else. I mean... that's the thing about newspaper columns. They're supposed to be sort of evanescent and kind of dissolve. And now they're not only kept forever on the internet, but they're mine. I've actually gone in a book. So it seems to be against all the proper rules of what these things should be. You know, these are random thoughts I had and they're probably completely wrong and should have probably just been burnt after reading. But anyway, now they're in a book. So you can see all my mistakes.
I think that's what makes them good. I mean, I genuinely think they'll be looked at by historians because they're... Because they're documents of someone's opinion, but also like someone, if it doesn't feel to me like you are, you know, I think, you know, I can probably guess roughly where your politics lie, but you're very even-handed in a way that I think comedians and people who write comedy should be. You're just looking for the stupid things that anyone's done. So it's not, you know, often it will be the government because they're the ones making the decisions.
It's mostly the government. When the Blair government were in, you know, right back at the start when I first started doing a sort of diary column and things like that, you know, it was the Blair government and then the Brown government. And I read about them all the time in the Conservatives, just some random sideshow that...
yeah.
you visited once every 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's been slightly the case with Labour in the recent years. But I mean, you know, I would always welcome a new cast of characters.
Yeah. But you're finding the funny and it doesn't feel particularly biased. It's and it feels like I think your judgment is very good. There's loads of things where you are proved to be very correct. I mean, you make a prediction about Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister in 2019 after, you know, in about 2016. So you sort of get things sort of...
I always felt he wasn't done with us. I don't think he's done with us yet.
No.
This is what's happened. It's like the bloody Marvel Cinematic Universe. You don't die anymore. You can come back. This is what, you know, Johnson's can come back. Trump can come back. This, it used to be... you know, you were put beyond use. A sort of concrete dome was built over you and you emerged as a sort of elder statesman / big beast, you know, in due course when you'd been sort of decontaminated. Now it's like he's already the day Liz Truss took over, Boris Johnson was the favourite to take over from her as Tory leader. Like, oh, we just dealt with that.
Yeah, well, I remember.
It's the sense of no escape that we're living through. There's none of it's ever over. It's just dormant.
It's true. I think, again, within your writing, though, something that I think is very, your range of references is very good. You always kind of pick the right, you know, you've got quite a broad knowledge, I think, because you're obviously quite into sport, but you're also into entertainment. So you'll pick a film reference or a sporting reference and apply it to a politician. And it's always bang on. I do, you know, I notice on Twitter.
Oh, you are nice. Well, I think people just like that, though. People like that because, you know what, people really hate politics to a large extent, but they do quite like sport and they do quite like movies and things like that. And I always think really associatively anyway, whenever I, you know, even when I'm watching sport, I will think, that's a little bit like what's happening in politics at the moment, even if it's just like some random moment at the cricket. So I'm always thinking of the other thing anyway. Yeah. And I think actually filtering politics through the prisms of things that people do actually like, be it like pop music or movies or anything like that, makes it more palatable. It's a bit of a spoonful of sugar, isn't it?
It is.
And that's how I suppose how I found that way that I wanted to write about politics and that was more. And, you know, maybe that's why people have liked it if they have. Obviously not everyone likes it at all, but because it's more accessible in a way, because it's I try and talk about other things as well as.
Yeah, as well as, no, I think so, definitely. But also it's somebody calling out the stuff that I think often the newspapers aren't doing in a way. So you're, because it's your personal opinion and because it's your personal column, you're allowed to express views that even within The Guardian don't necessarily get sort of. There's always this idea of balance, which I think has got us into the trouble we're in that. People have sort of thought balance means if you say you like that, you know, we need to get the two extreme views, and then that's balance rather than the fact that most people are in the middle.
Well, actually, yeah, putting really extreme views a lot of people are in the middle, and putting really extreme views on, I think that's what happened to a large extent, is that, you know, Rolling News, which does not have huge budgets but wants to be interesting, and we have a lot of it, I think they realized, a little bit like reality TV bookers, that if you get people from two extremes and kind of shove them together, you get conflict, which produces drama, which is quite a cheap way of filling your airwaves and quite dramatic. And that kind of pundit TV, I think, I totally agree with you, was really damaging. You always had like some kind of really extreme lefty and then someone from the Taxpayers Alliance. It's like, guys, I don't think anybody, I mean, you know, this is the tiny ends of the graph.
Yeah.
And yet to have a huge number of debates and news presented via that particular device was polarizing, angering, provocative, just it made very emotional moments out of things that were really quite factual, and I'm not quite sure that was the right way to cover a lot of it.
No, well, and you know, and both Trump and Johnson basically used TV to propel themselves forward, so they, you know, it is which, as you discuss, is this sort of democracy turning into sort of their X factor and people sort of collating those things. It's, you know, I wonder whether we will get beyond it, or whether it needs, you know, like you say, it's sort of World War II led to things being a bit fair again afterwards, after everyone realised things had maybe gone a bit far. Maybe we need something like that again in order to reset.
Things had gone quite far. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, it's really difficult in a way to see. I spent a lot of the last few years saying to my children, you know, this isn't really normal. It didn't used to be like that. You know, they watch the Trump presidency. And after a while, I think, God, I've now been, you know, my daughter's eight. I've been saying this isn't normal for about the last 6 years. I mean, technically to her, it is normal, you know. This is what it's like now. And it's quite hard to see a pathway back to putting the genie back in the bottle, or the, you know, demons back in the box, or whatever it is. And I think it's quite hard for us to see a way back. I'm not saying it's impossible at all, but it is quite difficult, particularly with social media and things like that. I think it's, and the tech come, I'm just not sure. I certainly can't see the way back myself.
No. Well, you know, I do think that still in the middle, there's more people in the middle, but they're still being divided off into different groups. It's the people, there's, you know, maybe, I think sort of Brexit always felt like a sort of 25% thing, but the 25% of people who liked it were really into it, so were vociferously going for it, whereas most people didn't get. I mean, if we hadn't been called to vote on it, I really feel with Brexit, none of us were really qualified to make any decision about it, but we all felt strongly enough about it, but we didn't. When it came down to it, it would be very hard for anyone to justify their opinions, because it was just like, I like Europe or I don't like Europe is for most people was most.
I suppose one thing I do find quite encouraging in a way, if you're trying to look for sort of the positives, the Brexit vote was a vote in which lots of people who just don't normally vote in elections did actually vote and would have, you know, crawled across hot coals in some cases to vote. Now, you know, you may not, I personally may not have liked the way they voted, but that's by the by. It reminds us that it is possible, and that even people who, groups that people think are kind of lost to politics, or politicians think you can't reach those demographics, or they, you know, they can sometimes rise up and say something. So, you know, never write anybody off and never think, oh, we don't have to, you know, someone once, a pollster once told me that the only people politicians care less about than young people are dead people, because young people don't vote and young people don't that. And I think, well, maybe, but I really wouldn't put it past young people to make a show of lots of things now. Or, I mean, I'd never write groups and demographics off and think they're kind of lost to politics, because they can become resurgent. And obviously sometimes that can happen in a sort of way that you really wish it hadn't. But I think it can be positive, and we mustn't think that groups are lost and or that things can't change, because clearly a seismic change happened in 2016 in lots of different ways. And it may not have been to my taste, but that's not to say the next one wouldn't be.
No, and I think that is true, that, you know, if you only need a dedicated group of people. So I think if young people who should and are doing to some extent get together, and I think like all the, in a way, I feel like there's a lot of backward steps going on all around the world. And maybe that's the first step in going forwards, in that taking that backward step and then realizing, oh, hold on, this isn't actually the way forwards. But I think the environment and stuff like that will hopefully make people come together. But yeah, if 25% of people can get behind, you know, Nigel Farage is the most successful politician of our age, even though he couldn't get elected to as an MP.
And that says a lot about our age. That says such a lot about our age. You know, this kind of really quite small figure in lots of ways, but is nonetheless the most successful. I think that says something about the lack of titans.
Yeah. So if we can find, you know, if you can find that person, you can get that cause, which, you know, I feel there's enough going on that things, I have an element of positivity behind me, despite thinking that probably the world will be destroyed in the next few decades, which is great when you know, it's great. It's a great thing to think about.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
But it's not all about politics, as you say. So there's you know, there's great stuff about entertainment. Enjoyed the stuff about Greg Wallace.
He'll always be with us, I think.
You're very good at picking out the right people and understanding what makes them comedic, I think, which is, I mean, I do notice on whenever you put a column out on Twitter, basically all the comedians will retweet it calling you a genius all the time, which I think, so, you know, yes, they do, Marina. And, you know, I think that's impressive, because it's hard to write about politics in a funny way, I think. But also, I think to appeal to comedians, I think, shows that you're getting something right. Have you ever had the inclination to perform and get out and sort of do not stand up to do live shows?
Well, funny enough, when I was much, much younger, you know, when I was in sort of my early, really early 20s, I did things like stand up and I did perform. But then I don't know, wouldn't have had the confidence really to carry on at that age in my life. I really wouldn't have. And it's something that has... Now I'm too old to do all that, and I like writing, and I like writing for other performers, and that's sort of fun. But that could have been a different path, but I wouldn't have had the confidence to take that at all. And I also think it was really quite sexist back in those days, much more so than it is now, although as I'm not on the circuit, I can't do. But I did find it quite sort of, I think, you know, lots of attitudes have changed.
Yeah, I think it was very difficult for women in a way that it's, you know, things are, that's the nice thing about comedy, things have shifted, I think, not entirely. None of the things are always perfect, but it's definitely a lot better in those senses. So yeah, I can see that. I had the printed copy of this book. Have you done an audiobook version, and do you do the audiobook yourself?
I'm recording the audiobook intro tomorrow. I didn't do the whole book, but I've done quite a long introduction, and I'm recording that. And then I'm doing an interview at the end with Catelyn Moran. So we're going to have a right old natter about it all. And that's going on the audiobook. But I'm really quite worried about reading out loud.
Right.
Well, the idea of reading 479 pages or whatever is out loud, I just thought, they said, it will probably take you 10 days. And I thought, yeah, it'll probably take 30. I will really stumble over it and think, why did I write that?
It's a weird thing to have to go, but I quite like it as a...
What's it like?
Well, if you do it at the right point, I've realised I've only done one longer book as an audio book. But if you do it very early on, like you've finished the book and it's been approved and they've done all the editing, and then you do it, then you spot all the stuff that's wrong, and then you can change it in time for the... You can change it in the audiobook and you can change it in time before the book's published.
Amazing.
So I quite like doing it. And I think I like hearing someone do their own book if possible. They, you know, this book is absolutely mammoth. It is. There's so much.
It's really big. I know. It's really big. I would have. Yeah, I know. It's really big. But someone brilliant has read it instead. I will do the introduction and chat like non-seductively to people at the start, stumbling over my own words.
I think you seem a natural performer to me. So I kind of fancied that you would do your own audiobook. But
I'm going to really bring it for the introduction, Richard.
Okay.
I'm going to leave everything out there on the stage.
I mean, the introduction is great. You talk about it felt like I'd written a book I hadn't read, a bit like Katie Price, as you say. But I think that's sort of...
She's read none of her autobiographies, Richard, none of them. And that's what I felt when I was going through all these things, thinking, what was this thing that Theresa May did here? What was an indicative vote? You know, I couldn't remember what the meaningful votes were, that, but they were different than indicative votes. But you forget that during that time, despite the fact that, you know, I have no memory of what they are now, people were going home after work and watching BBC Parliament. This is not the behaviour of a healthy country, okay? You should go home and watch anything else. People were sitting there. You know, I felt really embarrassed. My children could do impressions of John Bercow. I mean, something very precious was stolen from my children by that period. And I was, you know, because I had to watch it for work and I'd have to say, shh, 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 they're doing another one. What's happening? I mean, I could not even explain to them what was happening. But yeah, we all lived through it.
And also you talk about telling yourself to get over how angry or histrionic you were about certain subjects. So in hindsight, you don't necessarily look back and agree with all of them or is it just...
There's probably things I don't agree with. And also I think, you know, there's a lot of columns just in the immediate wake after Brexit where, like, you know, 70% of the column sounds okay and 30% of the column would just sound like a histrionic twat, okay? But, you know, that was a huge mood at the time. A lot of people sounded like what we may later think histrionic twats. And so that's what it is. A column is a sort of record in a moment. And so this is a record told in the moment. It's, you may not agree with it afterwards, and you know, there may be things I got wrong, and there may be, you know, I often think tone is tone is the most important thing about any form of writing at all. And it's quite unfair. You can have something great to say, but if your tone's all wrong, it's a fiasco. And also, I have to say, as a writing trick, if your tone's right but you have absolutely nothing to say, often people won't notice and think, oh, that was good, even though it wasn't actually. But there might be tones that I got wrong, or there might be, I don't know. I mean, there's probably lots of it, but it's a sort of honest account. I mean, you can go back and see these things on the... I didn't do what Dominic Cummings does and changes his blog to say, I predicted an entire pandemic. Well, you didn't. It was quite tempting. Sometimes yeah. I would go back and think, oh, that did actually turn out to happen, or I was quite surprised, but I didn't go back and change things to make myself look better. Yeah. Although it was hugely tempting.
Well, that's what I like about it. It's a reaction in the moment, and it's a, you know, not exactly a knee-jerk reaction, but it's an instantaneous reaction. And so,
very hot take.
Yeah. But you talk about it being quite cathartic. Was it cathartic for you to write them at the time, or was it cathartic for you to look back over them all?
I genuinely think it is quite a cathartic. I mean, a lot of people I know have what I call unresolved news issues in the book, you know, because we've lived through this 6-year bombardment. But given my job is to look at the news and sort of write essentially my feelings down, which I think is actually a sort of approved therapy technique. Don't the therapists tell you to write lots of things down? Yeah. My job is sort of writing it down. So at the end of it, there is a form of satisfaction at having sort of not put it to bed, but at least sort of dealt with it on some level. So I've been quite fortunate in a way. Yeah, I have found it quite cathartic, particularly, at the moments where it was most chaotic, in a way, sort of sitting there and trying to think of the joke about this or that is actually quite a good discipline and makes you think through it, get through it, and deal with it to some extent.
And I think, and as a reader, I think it is. I mean, you know, the fact the book's called What Just Happened, we're in the middle of this stuff. It seems, a lot of it seems absolutely unbelievable and uncontrollable and out of our control. And that, you know, that's where it's comedy's job to make us laugh.
Yeah, I mean, I've got no idea what's just happened. That's why it's called the exclamation mark and the question mark.
Yeah.
I saw that a scientist had also written a book called What Just Happened, but there was no question mark and no exclamation mark in his title. He was so certain of things. I'm very uncertain, as you can tell. I have no idea what just happened. But I've always tried to sort of be a friend to the reader along the way and just, you know, I mostly watch this stuff on the sofa, same as everybody else. I don't go into the Houses of Parliament. I don't do all of those sort of inner access things. Sometimes I go to the party conferences. But in general, I've watched this stuff at home or listened to it at the radio and thrown things across the kitchen at the radio, just like everybody else. Yeah. And I've sort of wanted to be a friend to the reader all along the way to say, you know, let me throw my hands up in the air with you, because what has just happened?
Yeah. And you know, and you're very good at the comedy, but there's also a lot, I mean, there's a lot of serious topics. There's a very moving thing about Me Too. You talk about Sarah Everard as well. Obviously, there's a lot of disaster and death and stuff within COVID and everything else with all the other stuff that's happened.
Well, I mean, you can't believe it. We forgot the pandemic. Yeah. We forgot the deadly pandemic. This is the thing. You think, well, it's just, oh, hang on, I've forgotten the deadly pandemic. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, I'd forgotten about Brett Kavanaugh, and you go, oh, God, Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah. I'd almost forgot about Matt Hancock. And then, you know, there's great stuff about the billionaires. There's a whole section about billionaires in space and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, the space race. Yeah. So,
Another period might have been a big deal, the Oscar mix-up between La La Land and Moonlight. That might have been the biggest story of 5 years. Once upon a
in past years, we were dined out on that for a month. But I think it still was the biggest news in Hollywood for quite some time, because it's rather an insular colony.
Yeah, well, and then I don't think we get to Chris Rock and Will Smith.
We didn't sadly get to Chris Rock, but you know, plenty of time.
I'm sure he did at the time. Well, that's terrific. It is a terrific book. It's called What Just Happened, and it's going to be available in all the usual formats. I say, fittingly for this age, it's an important historical document that you can read on the toilet. That's my review of it.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. I wish they could put it on the front.
It's a weird thing, because it made me laugh and it made me feel depressed in equal measure. But I think ultimately the laughter wins. But you know, the depression part isn't your fault, Marina. You were working with what was available to you.
You can only play it as it lays, Richard. You can only play it as it lays.
I know from reading your columns that you must be a voracious reader yourself. Do you have any books that you're reading at the moment that you'd like to recommend, or anything coming out soon?
I'm so hot. I wouldn't like to recommend it because I'm so horrified. And it's actually, this is bizarre because of the room I happen to be sitting in because of the noise. I'm currently reading, it's for a thing, this. The Angels of Lovely Lane by Nadine Dorris. I'm really embarrassed, I have to admit this. I had to go on a tube journey yesterday and I was unable to take my book, which I normally do, because I just thought I can't actually. I could probably put it inside the Kama Sutra or something, but there's no way I could possibly. I have not actually read anything by this particular author before.
No.
I can't, having to admit to the fact I'm reading that at the moment. I said to my husband, I feel like I've been reading this book for 100 years. And he said to me, what page are you on? And I was like, 9. I've still been reading it for so long and I can see that I'm on page 132. That's not even a third. So It might be the book that finishes me off.
Okay. And do you have a favourite book or is there a favourite genre of book you like? I mean, you feel like you're well read.
I read a lot. I read a lot of history books, a lot of biography books. Yeah. I read novels. I mean, God, I'm trying to think I don't like to rank things, so I don't want to say a favorite, but I read a huge amount about Hollywood in the old golden era, I read a huge amount about Hollywood in the sort of golden age of the studios, but also afterwards. I mean, that's probably the subject on which I am most knowledgeable.
Right. Okay.
Never write about it. I never write about it. Yeah. So all the other things, I'm an amateur.
I know you've written one book before about celebrity. Yeah. Are you going to? Is it just two books you've got out?
Those are my two books. Yeah.
Are you planning to do anything? Because it feels like, I mean, as much as I love the columns, I feel like there's more to you than columns.
Yeah, I would. I would love to write something fictional. Yes, there are lots of other things. I'm doing sort of screenwriting as well. And so there's lots of other things that I would like to do. Just typing my little fingers to the bone, basically.
That's great. I suppose just from an author's point of view, did someone come to you and say, do you want to put these columns together and we want to print it? Or did you sort of tout this idea around, or was it?
Well, they asked me a few years ago, but owing to our arrangement, the Guardian's arrangement with the publisher, I did not feel that it was a deal we could both be proud of.
Okay.
and so my brilliant agent said, no, we'll wait for them to return to us. And then they did return to us with what I would describe as a deal we could both be proud of.
Okay.
So I have proceeded on those terms, if I'm perfectly honest.
I mean, it's quite nice to accidentally write a book, though, isn't it? Right, to write a book in very small chunks.
I really don't know how people... That's what I thought. I thought I've actually written this book, but it turns out there's rather a lot more to do than, you know, even... But I did say, gosh, imagine people who've had to write the book as well. I mean, there's so much around the edge of it, which I've really enjoyed, by the way, and going out and talking to people, doing all these other things. But it's, yes, I mean, I had actually technically already written the book.
Yeah, but it's very artfully put together as well. As you say, it would be weird if it was just in order thing. It jumps around. You know, you go through sections, and so there's something about politics.
But we have to break up the politics a lot with other things like celebrities and billionaires, because otherwise it would just be relentless.
But we're jumping around in time as well, so it's not just it's not just in the order.
We're hopping in time, yes.
Yeah, which I think is the right decision, and also because we all. I mean, when we remember it, we all know what happened. It's not, there's no spoilers to be had in this book.
Originally, the publisher said to me, you know, what about doing it in themes? And I was like, I don't have anything so fucking grand as themes, do I? I mean, I've got some characters, but, you know, they're given to me on a plate. But I don't have anything so grand as themes.
Right. Well, it's very terrific. You will enjoy it. And it's a book that you can, read at your leisure as well, which I like. Especially doing this podcast, I end up reading about 4 books at once. So it's nice to be able to go.
Unbelievable.
It's nice to be able to go and dip into something and read a bit and then go, oh, it doesn't matter if I can walk away from it and come back. So I've very much been enjoying reading it. I do recommend it. It's extremely funny.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for coming on the podcast as well. It's been really lovely to meet you. Next week's podcast, I believe, is Richard Ayoade, which I've already recorded and is an absolutely fantastic podcast, so do listen to that. He's written a book for kids. And I'd just like to thank Chris Evans for directing and putting all this together. And thank you very much to my guest, Marina Hyde. Thank you.
Thanks so much. It was lovely.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.